Down at Third Man, the cricket podcast, talking all things cricket, from club cricket to million-pound franchises to the Test Match Arena, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket.
Hey up, it is on to episode 22 of the Down at Third Man podcast. Me and the ginger one, Ada, here tonight. We're also going to be joined a little bit later on with a little interview with Peter Hatzoglu from the Melbourne Renegades over in Australia, and actually lives in Melbourne as well. Before we get going, as always, big shout out to our supporters, Woodstock Cricket. I'm sure plenty of people have seen lots and lots of social media coverage of all the great stuff they're doing and selling at the moment. Get on their website, get ordering yourself some kit, use our discount code THIRDMAN25. Go and treat yourselves, because why not? And we all, as we always say, if you're not doing well, blame it on the bat, because it's never your fault, is it, dude?
No, mate, never.
Never.
But I've got a decent bat, so I can't say that.
Hey, here we go. Also, obviously, we're always supporting our charity partners, Cry, Cardiac Risk and the Young. Can still get hold of bat stickers off us. Just a little donation on our fundraiser, on our Just Giving, would be brilliant. And, of course, you can take on Jono in his charity challenge. See if you can score more runs on him. I was just waiting for Dude to say that. Save me the job. Right then, before we get into some cricket news, how are you, dude?
I'm all right, mate. Just trying to get a tag out with top and I still can't get it out. I had it on Sunday as well.
Oh, dear me. Wearing your England top and it's still got the tag in.
Fantastic.
Supporting the boys. Exactly. Right, well, before we talk about the England boys, as in the cricket lads, a bit more, we'll talk about the other cricket news that's been going on. The Blasters in full flow, plenty of games on every single day, more or less. Been a really good, entertaining start. I think star of probably the first week was Joe Clark with an amazing 136, I think it was, for Notts the other day. Lots of people saying he's possibly the best batsman to not have been capped by England at the moment. Obviously, had his problems in the past that's probably cost him what would have been a guaranteed place, I would have said, because he was always expected to play for England, but made some personal mistakes. Johnny Bairstow today has been very, very entertaining. It's a 50, hurts his leg, then decides to just start batting, stood in front of all three and just swing big because he can't run. And it's an even quicker second 50 and finishes, was it about 110, dude?
Something like that, I think, yeah.
He's smashing it, isn't he? So, good start there. Pretty reasonable start from Gloucestershire. We've got a few lads sporting our bat stickers, which has been good to see. And Benny Owl's had a good start for them, which is always good to see. Top of the table in the South Group is Kent Spitfires. But they have played a couple of games more than Sussex and Surrey, who I think will fancy the chances of catching them up. But out of nine teams, there are six of them on 2 points, which is not particularly great for working out the permutations of who's going to finish where, but it'll surely make it quite entertaining. And then the North Group, Yorkshire at the top, with Birmingham and Lancashire net run rate just splitting those three there on 6 points. Leicestershire and Northamptonshire on 0 points at the bottom.
But Birmingham are going to win tonight because they're currently playing and they're probably going to win.
Yeah, they're against Leicestershire, aren't they? So
yeah.
I think Leicestershire might go no points from, is it five games if the game goes as you would expect. Also today, there's been a test match start, England in India in the women's cricket. Good start from England, really. 269 for six. Runs for Winfield Hill looked quite good earlier. Hitting quite impressive when someone hits two sixes in the first morning of a test match.
About
that. Tammy Beaumont at 66, Evan Knight got 95 on it. I think it was 100th game captain in England. Nat Siver 42. And at the end of the day, it was Sophia Dunkley and Catherine Brunton. Sophia Dunkley, the first ever black female to play for England in a test match, which was good to see. I would put England in the driving seat, to be honest, even despite having the collapse.
I was going to say, they did the standard men's stuff, didn't they? Let's get off to a decent start and then have a big collapse.
Yeah, they had the classic English bang collapse. But to be fair, they did score more runs in that top four than I think England have scored in what feels like forever. So fair play to them. The other bit of cricket news is obviously what starts on Friday, and starts only a few miles away from where I am currently. It is the World Test Championship final, New Zealand versus India, happening at the AGS Bowl, or the Hampshire Bowl as it has to be called, because the ICC don't like sponsors, weirdly.
Anders.
they like having all the bloody Dacia Altros, whatever it bloody was, plastered around. But no, you can't call it the AGS Bowl. So, New Zealand, India, who are you backing, dude, dare I ask?
New Zealand, mate.
Is that supporting them, or think they're going to win?
Both.
Same. I'm going to agree. I think both. I think New Zealand, and I hope they do, because I think they deserve it the most. But I think New Zealand will come out on top.
I do think, though, now the pitches are getting a bit harder, it might suit the Indian spinners a bit more.
Well, it might do, but it's meant to be, well, tonight's meant to be very wet down here, and then I believe it's meant to be quite wet across the 5 days, which could be a worry, because obviously it could end up with just being a ball draw, although they have got a reserve day.
They have, yeah, just make it a green seamer as well.
Yeah, it could do with that, couldn't we?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure it'll be really interesting. I'm sure lots of people will tune in. And I guess it's interesting, because it's the first time a test match has been for anything more than a trophy that doesn't really mean anything. I know the Ashes obviously means a lot to us in Australia, but this is the first test match where you could say there's actually a world championship at the end of it. Like, there's something
I still think
it should really matter. I think it's a good idea. I just don't
it's
think
a good idea, but
they just haven't done it very well. Yeah, they haven't worked out very well. But I'm sure that'll be really interesting. I'm sure we'll have some feedback on that next week. I'm sure.
All you need to do is play too much series against the worst teams around, and you're guaranteed to get in the final.
Well, yeah, that is very true. I don't understand why a two-match series against Zimbabwe would count the exact same as a five-match series against Australia or India. Hey-ho.
Played like Bangladesh at home in like a three-match or two-match series and won it obviously easy.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, here you go, you're back at the top.
Yeah, it is bizarre. But I think one thing we don't need to worry about is England being World Test champions anytime soon. Obviously, second test happened last week. I think it's fair if I was to recap it and say England got absolutely dicked. It was that bad. I actually struggled to remember the scores. So
We didn't get many.
England, 303 all out, which at one point looked quite successful because we were proper struggling. I think we were 175 for six, and you're thinking, oh dear. But then actually, 303 maybe ended up, I don't know. I think it was a below par score, although it looked maybe quite good when you think how bad we'd started. Trent Bolt and Matt Henry doing most of the damage. But then New Zealand only managed 388 themselves. So you thought we were in there. Three lads got 84, and Conway, Young and Taylor. You thought maybe we're back in it. You know, Brodie's done a good job there. Four for England, 122 all out. Top scorer Mark Ward with 29. Wickets for everyone really there. But what, dare I ask, what do we make of the batting of England, mate?
How long have you got?
I mean, I think you could sum it up in a couple of words, but as long as you want to sum it up.
Burns has got man of the series, so he's done okay.
Yeah.
Sibley gets the odd 60 off about 500 balls.
It's fine.
Crawley is wank. He's not wank. Yeah. He's been wank.
He has been, yeah.
Root can't bat in England at the minute, or anywhere apart from Asia.
Yeah.
Pope gets a lovely 20, then gets out off not many balls. Lawrence is decent if he gets past the first 20, 30 balls.
Yeah.
Bracey, good county player. And then we've got a lot of fast bowlers and no spinners. I think that's summed up.
Yeah. Well, we'll quickly then, we'll do player ratings. So we'll just do them for England. What do you rate that England team? So Rory Burns, and you can do it just for the whole series if you want, because I guess it's not.
I don't even know who got what last game.
Well, Rory Burns got an 80 then a duck, so.
We'll give him he's the best of the batsmen, so we'll give him a 9.
Oof, that's been kind. I'd have given him maybe a 7.5.
He did get a ton as well on one of them.
Yeah, I guess so. Go on, I'll go with that. Dom and Sibley.
Player of the series as well. So.
Yeah, true.
5.
See, I'd maybe give Sibley a 6. I think he was too bad. This next one, Zach Crawley.
None.
Yeah, I think Zach Crawley
would. 1, because he got 17 and looked okay.
Yeah. Joe Root.
2.
Yeah, I'll be honest.
He batted okay in the first one because he had to get 14 or 4.
Yeah.
So probably like a 3 or a 4, but I think he chose the wrong team.
Yeah.
So that just doesn't help.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't disagree with that. Ollie Pope.
3-4.
Yeah, not good, was it? Got starts. Looked like he was going to go on and score a really classy turn. Gets out for less than 20. I mean, it's not great, is it, by any stretch? Dan Lawrence.
A 6 because he got a wicket.
He got a wicket. He got an 80 off.
And he basically got us to that 300.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we would have been absolutely rolled.
Yeah. James Bracey.
Oh, friend of the pod.
Yeah. Can't score too far.
I feel a bit bad for him, so 5.
Yeah, I feel bad for him because he is a top-order batsman who keeps a bit, and then he's been put in at 7 and told your job is to keep, and it just doesn't, to me, doesn't make much sense, shall we say. People go on about the Ed Smith bizarre selections. I would put James Bracey being picked and batting at 7 is one of those dodgy selections.
Because obviously, I'm not sure when the India series starts, but can you then go and say, oh, let's drop Crawley and put Bracey 3 when his high score is 9?
Well, this is the issue, isn't it? And we'll come on to that in a minute about what the problems are and how on earth we sort them. Ollie Stone, I'm going to give him a solid 7. Maybe even a 7.5. I was impressed by him. And he can hold a bat.
And yeah, can hold a bat as well.
Now, my man of the match, purely because of his batting skills, Mark Wood.
You just can't not like him, so an 8.
Yeah,
I don't even know how he bowled, but just for his bat.
He bowled all right, to be fair. He got a couple of wickets and bowled okay. Nothing spectacular, but he bowled okay. Interesting that he played back-to-back tests, I thought, to be fair. But, yeah, took a couple of wickets. Showed that he can still bat. So, I mean, you can't really argue too much. Stuart Broad?
He bowled very well, so
yeah, I was impressed.
I did mainly for this game because it wasn't too brilliant the first one, was he?
No.
But, you know, we bowled well in this one. I'll give him an 8 for this one.
Yeah, did well for Broad. And then Anderson, who maybe actually, I guess, struggled a little bit more, would you say? Well, didn't struggle as such, but only the one wicket in the first innings and then none in the second innings either. So
it's
not
the best series, are they?
No, he hasn't quite looked fully up to it, but I wonder if that's a case of not having really played much anyway in general. It's all well and good having this rotation policy, but if certain players don't even get to play, or don't play, or hardly play anything, it's a bit hard for people to get any form when they're not playing cricket.
Give him a 5, just because he's...
5. Because he's the great, because he's the GOAT.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right then, so England's problems, I think we can all clearly say...
1 to 11.
See, I think that's harsh, because I think from 8 to 11 were great. It's the 1 to 7 bit that's the issue. Obviously, Stokes and Butler can come back in, so Stokes will go 5. Butler will no doubt go, I would assume, 7, but could go 6, I guess. And Wokes could come in at maybe at 7 or 8, depending which one.
Batting's weak enough, mate. If you've got
I would put Wokes at 8.
But... yeah, you've got to have... well, for me, it's Wokes or Robinson for that one spot.
Yeah.
If he's allowed to play, by the way.
Yeah, well, yeah. So, the problems. Do we think Burns and Sibley are the problems, or do we think actually they could be the ones, or they are the best ones currently going forward to open?
Best of what we've got are the men.
Yeah, I would keep them two opening for now. I would give them the India series. Number 3 for me, Zach Crawley. It's got to be, it's time up. He needs a break for me.
Who are you having at 3, though?
Well, this is the question. There's been talk of pushing Root up, pushing Stokes up. There's been talk of giving Bracey a chance in his proper place. There's also the more radical, shall we say, out there, who'd bring back David Milan. You could possibly look at someone like Tom Abel from Somerset. I think it's going to a lot come down to them two rounds of county games before the India series. Who can perform? I don't see... unless Zach Crawley goes out and gets 2 tons in 2 games, I can't see him getting another go at 3. So it's where Bracey scores them.
Bracey's been doing that in the county, and it's completely different when you go and play India to...
well, obviously. And I don't think... I think that would be the same if you gave, say, Tom Abel a chance. I guess David Milan, you could say, well, he's used to facing like the very, very best bowlers in the world. Yeah, it's been white ball, but he never really failed that much, did he, for England when he actually had got a go in tests? Australia probably suits him because of how the tracks play. So,
I'm getting Root 3.
Oh, he's gone for it. He's gone for the big push-up.
Lawrence 4.
Yeah.
That's why he's been batting for his county.
Yeah.
Stokes at 5 because I think, weirdly, you want to break Root and Stokes up because as soon as they go in, like...
Yeah, if you lost them in 2 overs, you're buggered, aren't you?
Pope at 6 because, again, he seems like he just wants to get on with it.
And then Butler at 7.
And Wokes or Robinson, 8. Leach at 9.
10, one abroad, Anderson.
Yeah, I'm not playing both anymore.
And then what, Stone or Ward at 11?
Starting with Broad because he's in the most form.
Yeah, fair enough.
Also, maybe depending on conditions. Yeah. And then one of Wood or Stone.
Yeah.
I don't think Archer will be back, will he?
Unlikely. He'll be back at some point, but not, I doubt, for that first test very much anyway. Yeah. The only question I would say is Ollie Pope. Is it good enough doing nice-looking 20s and actually scoring any runs?
Again, we haven't got anyone else.
Well, I guess this is where, again, some people would argue and say, well, do you look at putting in either someone new like Tom Abel who scored runs or someone else who scored runs in the county championship? Or do you... I know he's injured, obviously, at the moment, but I'm sure talk would return of, why don't you try Ben Foulkes at 7 and Butler at 6? Because Butler bats better at 6 and Foulkes is the best keeper. Sure, that'll be discussed loads when it comes to India series. I don't see it happening because I think Josh Butler will still be the keeper. But
I think I'd go Root at 3 just because he isn't scoring runs at 4, so you might as well just see, because he used to open at one point, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, he's number 3. If
he gets 40 batting at 3, is a lot more than what Crawley's doing. We'll be off to bet. We might be like, what, 80 for 2 instead of 30 for 2.
Well, yeah. And
you've got some of your stroke players to come in that might get you to 350, close to 400 instead of 200 to 300 every week.
I will ask the question because it keeps popping up. Do you think Joe Root should still stay as captain, or do you think England maybe need to accept that he doesn't score enough runs as captain and maybe they should let him go back to just being the batsman?
Mm-hmm. But then he did it when he played in conditions that suited him, so...
Yeah, it's hard.
I don't think captain's doing anything. I don't think it's affecting much because, like I say, he's done it in conditions which it suits him. He just doesn't seem... Like I say, he got most of his runs off Santner just playing that sweep shot.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I haven't really watched much of the series, but from before, like last summer, he just like seems to like guide one to goalie or...
Yeah.
He'll play a one-day sort of shot with the attack field.
I'll be honest, I also seem to feel like he's trying to bat too much like Kane Williamson. Now, don't get me wrong, I love Kane Williamson, but I feel like the route that he used to watch when he was younger and he was just natural and just played how he played looks much more comfortable and obviously scored much more runs than this route that every time we have a winter or a summer comes in and says, well, I've changed something, I've tried this, I'm changing this, I'm doing a back twirl like Williamson, I'm doing this like such and such. And I wonder if there's a question about trying to meddle too much, trying to make yourself look too much like certain players when you should just play how you naturally play. And yeah, there's little bits you can tweak for certain things, like if you're not very good against a short ball and whatever, but changing like your complete trigger movement or how you hold the bat or what you do as the bowler's running in, is that getting a bit too much? Is that affecting Butler would probably be the one, I would say, looking at it, purely because he seems to be the biggest.
See everything. And also, he's going to bat 7, so, you know, it's not like, he's got a bit, say if he's been keeping and, you know, a lot of pressure in the field. He's got a bit of time relaxed, well, I say a bit of time, actually, with that top 7. And, you know, it isn't really, that shouldn't be that much pressure on him to score runs. Obviously, he should obviously be getting runs, but it's up to your main, top 4 or 5 to get the bulk of the runs, isn't it, to them?
You would think so.
And he can still go out and just play his normal way.
I think in terms of a cricket team brain, because I know people have been saying, there's two types of captain in test match cricket. You either pick your best player / batsman, who's a nice guy, and just let him do it. And it's not actually because he's particularly a very good captain, it's just because he's the best player, so he's guaranteed play every game. or you pick the best, who you think is the best cricketing mind. And I know a few people have said they think Josh Butler is the best cricketing mind, and have said, noted that maybe we have struggled these last two tests, and there's been some interesting decisions when Josh Butler hasn't been there to guide the way alongside Root. But I'm sure this will all be discussed to absolute death, because we've got quite a while now until the next test series. We've got plenty of white ball cricket. Squads were announced for the white ball cricket. Chris Wokes is back in a T20 shirt for the first time in God knows how long for England, which should be interesting. I think I saw David Willey's back as well.
Is he?
I think it was David. I saw David Willey was back. Yeah, I think David Willey was back as well. So shows that maybe England are considering that sort of bit like Bhuvneshwar Kumar, that sort of swinging opening bowler to open up for us, which could be an option that maybe means someone like Tom Curran or Chris Jordan may end up missing out. Right, I think we've talked enough about England, so we'll go to the ads with Woodstock. Then we'll have the interview with Peter Hatsoglu, and then we'll come back and we'll do our talk about the North Stars cricket from the weekend.
Looking for a new cricket equipment partner for yourself or your club can sometimes be tricky. With so many options to choose from, how do you make the right choice? When you want quality, value and service, there really is only one place to start. For more than a decade, Woodstock Cricket have been producing award-winning, high-performance cricket bats from their Shropshire workshop. Matched with their classy soft goods, luggage and accessories, Woodstock Cricket really do tick all the boxes. Get in touch with Woodstock Cricket and find out why many loyal clubs, players and international customers can't be wrong at info@woodstockcricket.co.uk.
So it's Tuesday morning, I'm down on the Isle of Wight in the sun, and I'm joined by someone over in, I'm sure, somewhere just as hot. We've got our first overseas guest on. We've spoke to people around the world before, but they've always been English, but we're delving into new areas. We've got on with us today an Aussie cricketer, a very good Aussie cricketer at that, Melbourne Renegades, Peter Hatsoglu. How are we, Peter?
I'm good, thank you, Ash. Good. It's not quite as warm as what you'd think it is in Melbourne, but anyway, I'm sure it's nothing like what you guys have in the UK.
Yeah, we might have 20 degrees at the moment, but I'm sure by the end of the week it'll be nice and damp, because it wouldn't be British weather without it. So obviously in Melbourne, I believe Greek father, Macedonian mother. How does that end up in becoming a leg spinner for the Melbourne Renegades? How do we get into cricket? How does life end up in Sunshine Hearts Cricket Club and becoming a leg spinner?
Yeah, that's a really good question, actually. Look, my parents both had parents who emigrated to Australia from Greece and Macedonia, or Northern Macedonia as it's known now. They settled in Melbourne's west, and you know, obviously Australia had its predominant sports at the time being AFL, Australian Rules Football, and cricket and rugby as well. And so my dad in the winters he'd play AFL football, and in the summer he'd play cricket for Sunshine Heights. So from that, you know, when my dad had me and my younger brothers, we all continued on the legacy, I suppose, and played cricket at Sunshine Heights as he did when he was a young boy.
Now, is Sunshine Heights as nice as it sounds? Because I'll be honest, I think if you called a cricket club Sunshine Heights in the UK, people would just laugh at you.
Yeah, well, look, I suppose the UK's got such a rich heritage and history that the names are quite different to what they are in Melbourne, you know, or in Australia, where it's a much newer society and that sort of thing, or it hasn't been around for as long. Look, Sunshine's the west of Melbourne is typically how do I explain it? It's the probably the lower socioeconomic area of Melbourne, I suppose. But you know, every suburb has its nice, has its good and its bad, I suppose. So yeah.
Yeah, us from Stoke can certainly agree with that sort of logic. There's certainly nicer areas and not so nicer areas. But nothing wrong with either of them. So, coming through at Sunshine Heights, was it always going to be a leg spinner, always massively into cricket, or was fancy yourselves as a batsman, fancy yourselves as a quick bowler, or is it always been now leg spin's the way to go? Shane Warne's sort of the role model.
So I actually didn't really enjoy cricket at all up until I was about 13. So my story my story in sport as a young person was I played everything. I did athletics, I did AFL football, cricket, swimming, and I also did soccer, football, which as you guys would know it, which I really loved. So like right now watching the Euros, I was watching England get up over Croatia the other night, and I love football, soccer as we know it here. And when I was really young, I mean, I still vividly remember being at my local soccer club, wanting to be like Wayne Rooney, I suppose. And I really enjoyed soccer growing up, but cricket was always something that my family was heavily involved in the administration of Sunshine Heights Cricket Club. When I hit 13, I played in this really unique team of it was actually a team of South Sudanese immigrants, and they'd recently settled in Melbourne in Sunshine. So it sounds bizarre, but that first season I had with a team of eight South Sudanese young cricketers, who I'm still very good friends with today, was the first season where I actually really started to enjoy my cricket, and I sort of went from there with the leg spin and yeah, just cracked on with it.
What do you think it was about that team that sort of made you sort of fall back in love with the game more and sort of feel like, actually, this is a sport for me? Is it something they did, or was it just like a combination of things that sort of came to that?
Look, I think when you're a young kid, I think you tend to gravitate towards the things you're good at. And as I was maybe 9, 10, 11, whatever, I played in a team where I probably wasn't maybe I wasn't the standout player in the team or whatever. And I didn't quite like not being the best, I suppose, as a really young kid. But then when I got to this team where I was playing with, nine people that were completely new to the game of cricket from, you know, of all places, South Sudan, and different regions of Africa, I found myself being one of the better players in the team. And I suppose, with that, I probably felt like I was, I just enjoyed the game more naturally. You know, when you're doing well at something, you tend to enjoy it more, I suppose.
So to quote the great cricketer, it's all about being an alpha and champing people then.
Yeah, well, the great cricketer wasn't around when I was 13 years old. But yeah, along those lines, yes.
Yeah, I don't think it'd be acceptable for a 13-year-old to listen sometimes to the great cricketer.
So they're good, they're funny guys, those boys.
They are definitely the kings of podcasts, I've got to give it to them. So obviously go through the grades in Australia, go to university. Did you actually think that sort of professional cricket was ever going to be sort of a route for you, an option for you, or was it very much go uni and then sort of enjoy cricket and just see how far you could get up and more of the sort of grade side of cricket?
Yeah, look, so Ash, the only reality for me was that cricket wasn't a reality when I was sort of 18, you know, to 18 to 20 in that sort of age range. So I did my, we call it VCE here, which is the equivalent of your A-levels. So I did my A-levels and I actually took cricket off entirely whilst I was doing our A-levels here. So I never made any sort of junior pathway teams, never made any sort of, any of our state sides, which is the equivalent of your county system. So So I never made any of that. So cricket wasn't a reality for me. And with that, I always sort of envisaged myself as someone who'd go into a regular job. For me, I was working in finance and I study in finance and that sort of thing. So for me, going into financial services is always sort of what I've sort of wanted to do since leaving high school. But you know, the world works in funny ways, and I sort of managed to just work my way up through the grade cricket system here in Australia, and through some of the obscurities with COVID and list management in the turbulent world that is the COVID environment. I managed to somehow get a replacement player deal with the Melbourne Renegades, and it's all sort of history. It ended up working out really well.
So what was it like getting that sort of call up from, because I think I've read it, only 7 games was it in first grade before making the Melbourne Renegades debut, and then obviously you're playing for the Renegades alongside people like Aaron Finch, and you're taking the poles of Mitch Marsh and Cam Bancroft, which sounds like a pretty good debut and a pretty good day out.
Yeah, it was I'd be lying if I said it wasn't a sort of a rags to riches story, I suppose. With my grade cricket club here in Australia, we have a spinner. I'm sure you'd know him, Farwad Ahmed, who played for Australia, and he's played 2020 cricket all over the world, and he's a champion, right? So yeah. I was always in his shadow at Melbourne University. So I was sort of always in the second 11, in the third 11, and we had a number of other good spinners at the club as well. So I was sort of always in the shadow, and you know, not being any of the underage representative teams and that sort of thing as well, your status is, you know, down the bottom of the barrel, I suppose. So so I was sort of hidden away a bit, and I managed to come through the grades at Melbourne Uni, and I got my seven games for the first 11 at Melbourne Uni. And my style of bowling, for people who haven't seen it, is pretty unorthodox, I suppose. So I like to bowl leg spin, but what I like to do is I like to really sort of bowl as fast as I can, I suppose. So fast leg spin. I'm not a big turner of the ball. In fact, I don't turn it at all, really. I sort of slide it on and rely on my drift and different bits and pieces like that to challenge the batter. So with that unusual style of bowling, I found that I had the element of surprise, and also I caught the eye of people when I was given the opportunity to showcase my skills, I suppose.
And what was the Big Bash like? Did you find it a big step up? Was it quite, I guess, sort of nervous being in front of sort of all them big names, or are they really welcoming, really good fun? Because whenever I watch a Big Bash, it looks like possibly one of the most fun franchise leagues to actually play in.
Yeah, look, I think the Big Bash was, I mean, it was an early adopter of 2020 cricket, wasn't it? Where the Big Bash was probably one of the first comps in the world to really take 2020 cricket seriously, and the broadcasters over here in Australia had a lot of fun with it, and I suppose that legacy is still carried through to today, where last season rules like the power surge were introduced, and the Big Bash has like a really rich history of innovation and excitement and that sort of thing. So It is such an amazing tournament to be part of. I've not played in any other tournaments around the world, so I've got nothing to compare it to. But being able to play cricket against guys who you've grown up watching, and being in a team with guys like Aaron Finch, the Australian, you know, white ball captain, playing against cricketers like, you know, Alex Hales and the list goes on, like Jason Roy. It's so incredible, and it's a dream come true, and to be able to I guess succeed in the competition as I did was just such an amazing thing. So yeah, I'm just really keen on going around again next season and trying to do it again and hopefully get out to some of the competitions in the UK, particularly the 100, which sounds like such an exciting concept. Yeah.
So what is the plan then? Is it now right? Everything's on sort of next big bash, making the next big bash obviously a success for yourself and for hopefully the Renegades, and then is the long term aim sort of white ball cricket for across the globe, or is there still harbouring for a little bit of red ball cricket, both in obviously Australia, but also again possibly in like the county championship or elsewhere?
Yeah, look, my skill set's probably by own admission, it's probably really suited to white ball cricket, and although I still have ambitions in red ball cricket, it'd be really amazing to go and play 2020 cricket all over the world. I mean, I suppose not many people get to do that, and for me, the 2020 circuit stuff has always been something I've really been drawn to as a spectator, sort of prior to all this sort of happening with me, and now as a player still as well. It's pretty amazing to travel around the world and play in front of enormous crowds and you know, live music and really energetic cricket games and places around the world. So the ultimate ambition would be, I'd be lying if I said the ultimate ambition wouldn't be to play IPL. I mean, that competition in itself is pretty phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah, life-changing, isn't it? And I guess you say the 100's coming up in England. What do you make of having sort of, I guess it's a different format, but it still follows obviously a lot of what is cricket in general. But what do you make of that? Do you think it is going to be something that will be successful? Do you think it's something that a lot of people will want to play in?
Yeah, I think, look, any sort of innovation with cricket is as far as I'm concerned, you know, welcome it and go along with it, because we need it's such a competitive landscape at the minute, isn't it? I mean, you know, in the UK alone, you've got rugby union, you've got football, which is enormous. You've got so many other sports to contend with. It's such a dense landscape and such a competitive landscape that if we can broaden our appeal to consumers in cricket through shorter formats and, you know, more excitement and that sort of thing, then I'm all for it. And I mean, I'm thinking back to, you know, Kerry Packer's legacy in Australia where he sort of revolutionized cricket here and around the world. And I mean, any of that sort of stuff, I'm really happy to be part of it.
So really, we need to get you in Birmingham Phoenix then with Benny Howell. That's got to be the long aim, has it?
Yeah, Benny Howell and I, we actually got along really well in for the Melbourne Renegades. Look, we had dinner with one another pretty much every night, and it's good to see him going well for Gloucestershire at the minute. I mean, it's always a difficult task when you're bowling to Marnus Labuschagne, I suppose.
Yeah.
he took after him a bit the other day, but yeah, no, Benny's such a thoughtful cricketer as well. I mean, he's got, we've all heard about his, you know, 30 odd variations and whatever and that sort of stuff, but look, he's a really intelligent cricketer, and he's a real student of the game where he's really thoughtful, and with that he's got a lot to add and a lot of value to pass on to younger cricketers like me.
Yeah, great bloke, and the only person I think I've ever seen balance the phone on a cactus for an interview via Zoom, because he was in Melbourne at the time when we did it. I've never seen anything like it.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love that. I really love that. That sounds like him.
So I don't think it'd be fair for me to not talk about, obviously, your time that you did have in England. Spent a year, obviously, in the Cheshire County League for Ashton on Mersey. Took quite a few poles, good average. I think, was it 41 wickets at 18.39? Can't argue with that at all. What was it like coming over to England? Obviously, we're all based in Staffordshire, and quite a few of our listeners, as well as having people across the globe, even our listener in Cambodia is originally from Stoke. So what's it like to actually come over here? What did you find it much different? Was it welcoming over here?
Look, I think as do as do English people in Australia, with Australia people in England, we all sort of gravitate to one another, don't we? And we all have so many cultural similarities that we do really get along well with one another, I suppose, naturally. And look, my time in the UK in 2019 with Ashton on Mersey was like phenomenal. I mean, how good is it to, as a young person, how good is it to just get on a flight, drop all commitment, drop all responsibility, and just land in the lap of a cricket club that's going to look after you, that's just going to, you know, lay out the table for you, I suppose. It was, look, my time at Ashton and Mersey was phenomenal. I still remember being, you know, we were two tram stops away from Old Trafford, a short tram trip into tram. I say tram. They're called trams. Yeah, they are.
Yeah, there's a tram network in like Manchester.
Light rail is what it's. Yeah. But look, we were such a short distance from Manchester, short distance from Old Trafford. Our club was amazing, and of course Europe's on your doorstep, so everything's really laid out for you. I still actually talk to James Marshall, the captain of Ashton on Mersey, pretty much every second day, really. My time was so great there. We got promoted as well, which all sort of
always helps.
Yeah, it does. Really
good.
Does.
Good circuit that night, by any chance?
Oh, yeah. There's the Cheshire News and Cricket, or Cheshire Cricket and News banter, or something like that. the Facebook page, and yeah, you'll if you scroll through the depths of that, I'm sure you'll be able to find something on our celebrations that night.
Great stuff. So, just looking at that sort of English club cricket and Australian club cricket, is there any sort of noticeable differences? Or obviously we hear from a lot of people, like some people say Australian club cricket's more serious, others say English is, and there always seems to be a bit of a to-ing and fro-ing over who's better, who takes it more serious. Is there actually that much difference? Or
look, Ashton on Mersey, we weren't in the Cheshire Prem, so I'd be lying, I suppose, if I said I had a really, you know, full understanding of what club cricket's like in the UK. We were very much an amateur club, filled with some really, really good cricketers. And our comp, our competition was really, really competitive. We had, you know, each club sort of had an overseas player, and it was a really, really, really competitive competition. Club cricket, if I were to highlight the biggest difference between club cricket in Australia and the UK, probably in Australia, we've got more of a training culture, I guess. we sort of like to get down, you know, every Tuesday, every Thursday night to have a really good training session. Whereas in the UK, it's more casual, and rather than training, you play more games in the UK, and that's sort of the way everyone goes about it in the UK. Whereas in Australia, we like to train and play one game a week rather than three.
I'm experiencing that at the moment. I don't think I've actually trained in about 4 weeks, because we've got Tuesday night cup games where it's just a 100 ball slog. And there's certainly very little training that seems to go on during sort of the midsummer in particular. Obviously, though, club cricket is, well, in our view, is key to the game, and obviously really, really important. As a professional cricketer, and obviously as an Australian cricketer, do you find that is the case, that club cricket is still massively, massively important and something obviously we need to keep going and keep protecting?
Yeah, look, enormously. I'm still actually the treasurer of my local cricket club, Sunshine Heights, here in Melbourne. So, look, I suppose that says all I need to say, I suppose. Look, I think ensuring, you know, a really good grassroots structure and a really good grassroots program across the UK and Australia really solidifies a really strong future of cricket in both countries. I suppose one thing I was really amazed with in the UK was the UK doesn't seem, look, in Australia, we've got our local councils are really invested in sport over here. And I mean, all our grounds are publicly owned, and we sort of pay like a minimal lease on it each year. Like I'm talking like $200 a year, something like that. I don't even know what it is. It's such a small amount. Whereas in the UK, they're all sort of privately owned, and the councils and the governments, although they do give some support and relief and whatever, it's sort of sporadic, and it's through grant applications and that sort of thing, rather than consistent support each season, which I found really so different to how Australia's structured. Like Ashton on Mersey, we had a bar and a function room. And a lot of other clubs like this as well, from my understanding, where the bar and the function room sort of helped subsidise some of the costs of running the cricket club, along with player fees and that sort of thing. But yeah, in Australia, there are no sort of clubs and clubs where the bars and the function rooms subsidise anything. It's all the council's so much more invested in it.
Interesting. Yeah, we get little bits off the ECB and sort of Sports England, but as you say, we get very, very, very little. It is much a case of our bar, our function room, juniors doing events. That's where all our money has to come from. So I think it's certainly important that, and maybe something that as a whole, as a country, we need to look at and say, look, why? People keep moaning about sort of kids being fatter and unhealthy and not playing sport and being stuck on Xboxes. But then where's the support for your local club? So
I'm sure you guys are doing fine. It's just a difference. There's no right way to go about it. But just a different way of doing it in the UK.
Last thing I wanted to ask you before I have a couple of listeners' questions was just about multiculturalism in cricket. Obviously, you've experienced it firsthand, and it sounds like Sunshine Heights has got sort of people from all sort of backgrounds. Just how important is it that, do you think, that in cricket, and especially in like local club cricket, that multiculturalism is key in learning about, obviously, other different people's cultures and beliefs, and doing that through sort of the form of cricket is important? Because obviously I've had obviously a lot of the Black Lives Matters and different things over the last year or so. And for me, I think that should maybe sort of filter down a little bit more into the local cricket, whereas at the moment it stays very much, I would say, in the professional game. But how important is that multiculturalism, do you think?
Yeah, look, I mean, thinking on a more sort of broader societal scale, I suppose we as sort of developed countries around the world, we've all got the issue of an aging population and that sort of thing. And one way to offset the issues with that is immigration and that sort of stuff. So look, I suppose a really good way of assimilating newly arrived immigrants and that sort of thing into a country is having a really strong structure in your local sporting clubs. That's inclusive, that's diverse, that's all that sort of stuff for the newly arrived people. So, yes, sporting clubs play an enormous role in multiculturalism throughout all societies, I suppose. And it's good to see more action being taken at the top level with the Black Lives Matter movement and that sort of thing. Look, all that sort of stuff will hopefully raise awareness and that sort of thing and filter down one day to the grassroots clubs and that sort of thing. But look, I mean, public funding is also a really, really important part of establishing a really strong and inclusive club cricket and club sport environment anywhere in the world. So yeah, it's a collective effort that that can have some pretty enormous and pretty substantial impacts.
Right, we'll leave the serious questions there. We've got a quick question from one of our listeners, Jim. Now, I'm sure you'll have seen it on Twitter. Jim loves a silly question, I'll be honest. We've had him asking whether he would like some, yeah, I think he asked Ed Barnard if he'd like to fight 10 Joe Leach sized ducks or one duck sized Joe Leach or something like that along those lines. So be thankful that he hasn't gone to those depths of silliness today. However, he has got one question for you, and that was simply, have you ever been offered any form of sponsorship by a company that either deals in hats or glue?
Painter. I'm actually wearing their T-shirt. They, yeah. they gave me a hat. So.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So shout out to Dave Painter. And look, his predominant business is in shoes, not hats. But but he did give me a hat. So that's my answer to that. But no, otherwise, no glues.
No glues. Brilliant. Dave Pater is welcome to come and sponsor us as well if he wants. Not very good at cricket, but he can still sponsor us. And then the only other question that I've had is actually from one of our club, my club mates, and he asks the same thing every time, and it's simply, what is the best sledge you've heard or received?
Oh, geez. gee, you've put me on the spot here. Best sledge. Look, personally, I wouldn't say I'm an enormous sledger. I know the typical idea of Australians is we love a sledge and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Me, myself, I steer clear of all that. Look, I'll give you one sledge, which I really, it's more of a, it's not exactly a sledge, but look, I was playing in the UK actually at Ashton-on-Mersey, and we're playing against this guy. One of the blokes in our team was, just giving him a bit of stick, nothing too out of the ordinary. But this guy, I don't know, he must have had a bad night or whatever. He really got worked up by whatever our player was saying to him, and what I think he misheard. Our player may or may not have said something about being overweight. I don't know, something like that. the batter may have misheard and whatever. But he basically, you know, waved his bat at our player and started really having a go at him or whatever. And I wouldn't say this is the best sledge, but this is it's an interesting one where our player then laid out, whilst he was batting in the second innings, laid out a trail of biscuits or something like that. on his way to the change room. So look, I wouldn't say that's a great sledge or a particularly clever one, but that's something that I've witnessed.
I mean, getting props involved in sledging is a new one on me, but I like it. I like the thinking behind it. Good stuff.
It was the other, the Mr. Porky's, what are they called? The pork scratchings. Wonderful. He shouldn't have thrown them all over the ground. They're fantastic.
Yeah, it's a waste of a good port scratching, clearly.
Oh yeah.
Right then, the last thing we've got for you is we do a quick fire round. So it's just some quick questions, quick answers. I will play the test match special music, and we'll see how quick we can get through them. So starting in 3, 2, 1, best figures.
5 for 14.
Highest score?
98.
Red ball or white ball?
White ball.
Favourite cricket ground?
The Beats at Ashton-on-Mersey.
Nice, good job. Best friend in cricket?
Benny Howe.
Good job. Best player ever faced?
Jai Richardson.
Favourite food?
Pizza.
Favorite drink?
JW Lee's Lager.
Nice. Favorite TV show?
Suits.
Favorite film?
Pursuit of Happiness.
Favorite band?
Oasis.
Good shout. Pre-match song?
Wonderwall.
Classic. Guilty pleasure?
McFlurry.
Biggest fear?
Heights. Abseiling.
And last but not least, cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Now, I asked the last one because according to the Australian cricket website, it claims that your secret talent is dog whispering.
Yeah, it's funny you said that. You know, when we first got together as a Renegades squad, we had to fill in a little questionnaire. It had different questions like, what is your greatest fear? I put down Joffre Archer. What's your hidden talent? Dog whispering. Anyway, basically, I just didn't know how to answer these questions, and I made a whole bunch of shit up, essentially.
Brilliant.
I cannot whisper to dogs. I'm not that strange.
Great. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you, and we wish you the best of luck, obviously, with the Renegades next year and obviously South Australia. And we hope that we'll be seeing you in the UK sometime soon, whether that's for in the Blast or the County Championship or the 100, whatever it may be. We hope to see you over here and hopefully be able to have a catch up in it, a JW Lees with you and Benny Owl at some point.
Brilliant. Sounds great. Sounds an absolute treat. Thank you for having me.
No, been a pleasure, mate. Welcome back to what will be the final third of tonight's podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed the interview there with Peter Hatzoglu. As much as we like an Aussie bash, I think it's fair to say that he was a top bloke, a good laugh, and a lot of good stuff said there. Not only funny stuff, but also about the multiculturalism in cricket and how important club cricket is and how important it is that you stay involved and help out your local cricket club. Right, I guess it's time we talk about our local cricket dude. So, North Staff's cricket time. How did your weekend go, my mate? I've seen your picture in the Sentinel, so it must have gone well.
Oh, God, what a picture that is, by the way.
Yeah, some good facials there.
3 years ago, playing for Bing Land in my little stoke top with
I noticed, mate. Interesting. Yeah. But good weekend for you.
Good weekend again, mate. That's two in a row.
Good stuff. That's what I like to hear, mate. That's what I like to hear.
Yeah. So, yeah, Saturday, Friday I was battered, like normal.
No, that's no change.
But I think with the luck, my lucky thing is the last 2 weeks I've had a Matthew's breakfast for a game.
So that's the new thing.
Teams, so I don't know whether to keep, because if I don't have one Saturday, mate, and we lose, I'll be a bit annoyed. But yeah, good game against Silverdale actually Saturday. We bowled very well. I think at one point after seven overs they were about 2 for 1 off seven. Nice. Like, I think it generally was something like that. They got 120 something for 9 off their 40. We knocked it off for 7. And at one point, we did need 40 with 3 wickets left, but Ali Khan just came in and smacked it.
Good old Ali Khan, but not through Gina's window this week.
No, mate, no. Which good was stuff. Quite good. So, and then England won on Sunday, and the club was absolutely packed.
So, what more could you want?
Yeah,
exactly. Right then, shall we get on to the Prem to start off with? I guess it's only right we start there.
Oh, wow.
So, first game of the day, Bagnell almost cruised, really, to victory against Ashcombe. Bagnell won the toss and batted, 182 for 8. Wirmo got 29, Alex Graham 32, and Billowell batted 41. The mainstays there. And to be fair, I guess Ashcombe maybe might have thought that actually that's not the biggest total. It's possible, but they ended up 96 all out. Really, Amir Sadiq with 34, the only real sort of fight back from them. Base wicket spread around, really. Dean Ahmed took 4 for Freddie Dorbar 2, and then there was 1 each for Greg Willett, Billowell, and Alex Graham. So that was to start it off. Puts Ashcombe, I would assume, right at the bottom, would be my guess.
I'll have a quick look at the tables for you, mate, whilst you carry on.
Sure you will, mate. Whitmore won what appeared to be a bit of a thriller by just the 2 runs. So, according to this, Whitmore won the toss and elected to bat and were bowled out with 7 balls there, innings to go for 197. Main man actually wasn't Emilio Gay. He only got 9. The main one was Jack Beach with 91. It was the mainstay, really. Couple of ducks in there as well, a couple of low scores. But yeah, his 91 was key. Couple of wickets for Ashaw and Callum Harrison, but 5 for Michael Brown, the spinner. So fair, well bowled that man, as Jono would say. Good effort there. But Burslem, they fell just short. So from their 45 overs, they finished 2 runs short on 195-49. No particularly big scores in the top order, to be fair. But the big score was actually the wicketkeeper down at, it looks like 8 was 75.
Go on, Gills. Give it to
Gills one. Getting 75 off 66, but it wasn't quite enough to get him over the line. Main wicket taker, Mohammed Asif, who took 3 for, which again, I would assume, puts Whitmore actually in quite a good place after being targeted, well, should we say predicted at the beginning to being quite low down. I would guess they must be at least mid-table now, dude.
Hang on.
I was going to say Whitmore, but they lost 20 points, didn't they? So I bet you that's put them still.
They're
just
in the bottom two, drop. Mate.
Still in the bottom two.
Yeah.
Where would the extra 20 points put them?
Just under mid-table.
Yeah, so that 20 points is killing them instantly. Yeah. That's not good. Next up, Cheadle. Wow, high scoring game. I think it's fair.
Can I guess who got runs?
Well, if you want to have a guess who got runs, mate.
Ali Khan.
Yes, mate. So, Cheadle won the toss and elected to bat, and they posted 260 for 7. Andrew Coxon, 43. Daly, 38. Ali Khan, 75. James Sellers, 55. Everyone else, weirdly, in single figures. But big total. And Leek, with a ball to spare, were 248 all out. Big score from Alex Mallow, 119. A couple of 20s along the way, but nothing really to write home about from anyone else. But Matt Goodwin, 3 for, and James Sellers, a 4 for. Key there to Cheadle being successful against a Leek side that were tipped to be towards the top, but Cheadle doing well, going strong. Another thrilling game. Well, I say thrilling game. Another big scoring game, really, at Checkley. Longs won the toss and elected to bat. 212-9. They probably thought that wasn't a bad score, to be fair. 71 from Ed Jones. The skipper being the main contribution there. Seb Smith getting a 4 from Ben Hazelgrave, getting 3 foot for Checkley. But Checkley knocked it off with just under 5 overs to spare, 216 for 3. Not really a big score from the top 3. Tom Morton just got 11, Andy Carr 8, and John Bark 6. But then James Kettlebury, 93, and Michael Allen, the skipper, 75, not out, leads them to victory in what appears to have been a really entertaining game. Two more games left in the Prem. Meekins won by 22 runs. I would dare say that when they were 182 all out, they maybe at Modishaw would have been a little bit concerned that might not be quite enough. Michael Hill getting 32, Morsey getting 26, Pete Wiltshire getting 42. They probably thought that wasn't enough, I would guess, because it's, you'd think that someone like them would be able to chase, Mod would be able to chase that down at home, but they finished 160 for 7. Wasn't to be. Rob Spruce and Dan Richardson getting 42 each, but it just wasn't enough. Main men with a ball being Carl High and Paul Byrne for Meekins. And then last but not least, another high scoring game, another close game. Stone came out victors away at Port Hill. Port Hill won the toss and batted first, 209 for 7. Johnny Hancock, the skipper, with 92 up front. 34 from Tom Mason, a bit lower down the order. It was the other real contribution there. And I guess they'd again thought that was a decent total, really, wouldn't you? You'd think, but 3 wickets for Jacob Degg, a single wicket for 4 of the bowlers. And then Stone managed to just about knock it off with, I think, 4 or 5 balls to spare by the looks of it. 72 from John Cheadle, doing well again. 36 from Ben Motley. And they just got home despite a couple of wickets for John Hancock again, who's now really making himself an all-rounder. So, interesting games there, some interesting results. Ashcroft, I would assume, are still firmly rooted to the bottom then, are they, dude?
They were last time I checked, mate.
Well, you checked 5 minutes ago, so if there's not still...
You know what might happen. Yes, they are. And top two are Cheadle or Top. A little bit of a gap. It's like a win away. And Stone are second, closely followed by Meekins, 1 point behind in third.
Interesting there, then. I think it's fair to say Stone and Cheadle we expected to be mid-table to top off, but not we weren't expecting to be right up there, so good efforts from them. Shall we move on to the Division One then, mate?
Ah, go on then.
Well, Hendon started off really well. One of our favourites for the title, but they were 89 all out on Saturday. They were 89 all out. Newcastle and Arts Hill, Asif Raza took four for Dawar Hussein and Jack Wilson took two each. No one person getting into the 20s for Hendon, so not good. And then Newcastle struggled at first to knock it off. Two ducks in the top four. The other two in the top four not getting into double figures either. But 27 from Andrew White, head not out. 27 from Mitch Hagan, and then 14 from Bill Eakes. Saw them over the line and 20
he's
overs.
Four, many?
Yeah, he's not doing bad, is he?
Was it 99 last week?
I think it was, yeah.
27 not out CMM this week.
Hemeath won by 5 wickets in the end. Another high-scoring game. Looking at this, Audley batted first after winning the toss. 2-4, 3-5. You'd think a very decent total. Rob Emmings had a very big day out. 1-3-9, not out off 111 balls. 14 fours and 8 sixes. Good effort. Ollie Wilde supported him with 53. But Hemeath, that man again, couldn't help himself, Cody Banksy. 1-4-9, not out off 99 balls. 10 fours, 11 sixes. That's a pretty good effort. Well,
he's also missed off his bowling figures as well, mate.
I haven't looked at his bowling figures. Dare I look?
3-9 off 9.
3-9 off 9. I mean, he is also now becoming an all-rounder. My question is, and I'd love Banksy to come on and answer us this. First of all, why is he not playing for Staffs? Because, let's be honest.
He has been. I know he has played a couple.
Yeah, he didn't play on that Sunday, did he? So I wonder whether there was a reasoning for that. Because you'd think he'd be first name on the team sheet.
He's got a tight hamstring.
Yeah, right. and my other question would be is, what more does he have to do to get himself a trial at another county team? Because he's come from Warwickshire, quite a big county, you would think. Having played England under-19s, you'd think maybe there'd be a couple of people sniffing around.
I know reasons why, but I don't know if I'm allowed to say them on here.
Oh, interesting.
Not like that. Just he's interested, to be honest. He's just, from what I've heard, he's just enjoying
doing what he's doing.
Playing around here, working with his brother, doing a bit of coaching.
That's fair enough, isn't it? Can't argue with that. Next game up was the game at Leasit. Leasit ended up winning a high-scoring game quite comfortably against Blythe. Blythe got 2-2-1 for 6. Having a little loop through, Tom Lowe, the other Tom Lowe, as I always have, I believe he has to be known, getting 11 not out there. Yeah, probably so. Kazim Adams getting 95 off 89 balls. 45 for Chris Plant as well off 122 balls. They're two very different innings, if I do say so. But both as important. Chris Dyer with 30. Disappointed to see Toby Degg didn't get the bat in hand there. A bit disappointed there. 3 wickets for Matt Johnson and a couple for Dan Redfern. Leasit knocked it off with over 6 overs to spare. David Speakman, 50, 97 from not out from Dan Redfern. Comfortable victory in the end in what was quite a high-scoring game. Another high-scoring game, with comfortable victors. Ecclesall managed to post 274 for 7 from their 45 overs. Miles with 67, 47 from Scott Winnington, 35 from Craig Sinclair, not out. Littlestoke gave it a fair go, to be frank. 201 for 5, but just wasn't enough. 97 from the pro, Rafney Acker. I don't know if that's how you actually say it, but we'll just say that for now. And Ecker, Jamie Ecker, managed to get 42 as well, but just not enough. 2 wickets there as well for Scott Wynn as well. Next up, Alwyth, surely a storming towards the title at this rate.
Not really. I wouldn't say
it feels like they are. It feels like they win every week.
But Emmeath have won every game apart from one that is a
bad. Guess so, yes. Emmeath have also had a very, very good start. So, Sandyford all out for 111. Not a particularly good day. Just Mohamed Navid managing to make it to 23, making it past the 20 mark. 4 wickets for Steve Morgan, a couple for William Mashingi. And Alwyth knocked it off for just the loss of 1 wicket. Alex Banks, 40 not out. Ash Rogers, 38 not out. Comfortable win. And then the Parish the parish, Wood Lane. When they've posted did they post? I don't even know if they posted. Oh, no. So, Naipes managed 264 for 5 after choosing to bat. Lou Washington with 82, 38 for Sonny, 35 for Paul Goodwin, 58 for Asad Afridi. Some solid scores there. 2 wickets for Rob Price, friend of the pod, fan of the pod. But it wasn't to be for them. Wood Lane tried to chase it down. There was a 50 from Omar Ali. There was 34 from Jamie Loska, but it just wasn't to be. 230 for 9 they finished on. Wickets coming for 4 for Sonny and 2 for Asad Afridi. And that is how Div 1 finished. What's the table looking like, dude, dare I ask?
So you've got Alworth and Emeath who are kind of a bit of a way clear at the men. So obviously Alworth the top. They have lost the game, but they played in the rain. Well, I say in the rain. It's going dry up Alworth, but so they got a win then when I think like Emeath and most other teams banning game. Emeath are 5 points behind them. Have won every game apart from the abandoned one. And then Naipe are 27 points behind the top two.
All right. So Naipe are still in there then.
Well, they're all in actual as well. And Leicester actually. To be fair, you've got the bottom four, but from Newcastle and Artsill to Naipes Lee in third, there is 4 points separating 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams.
That's a fair league table.
Little Stoke are a bit of a way clear at the bottom, but then it's close between Blythe and Wood Lane for the second place by 1 point.
Fair. Div 2 time then, dude. Bit of a shock I'm going to start with as well. All Sager beating Port Hill 2s. Port Hill 2s all out for 162. Ben Warming to 44 was probably the only real main contribution. Want it to be known, by the way, Ben Warming looked like he was in a pretty much a pretty hammered state, shall we say. Pretty bad way at Edgbaston.
He's done well there, seems like most of it. He looked like his drink, which could have been something else, was all down his top.
Interesting, Luke, to be honest. So not a great score set from them. And 3 wickets for Steve Groom and Ollie Mitchell. The keys to All Sager keeping them restricted to 162. All Sager knocked off 7 down. Main score from Akil Ahmed on 52 and Sam Goodwin 43, not out. Despite 3 wickets for Matt Lowe and 2 for Liam Hassett. Norton and Hales, I think it's fair to say, handed out a bit of a thrashing. They gave Barlaston a good beating. They did, really. 206 for 8. There was 65 for Jack Furnival. 34 for Apu Katiji Pereira. I don't really know how you say that name. We'll just call him Pereira.
Who's 34
for him. This was for Norton and Hales.
Oh, is it like a sub-pro?
I would assume so.
Unless
mate,
you can't say know. Someone's name. Let me have a look.
No, mate, I am pretty certain it is Apu Katidiji. that goes, mate. Pereira. His name's Pereira now, anyway, in my book. Barlaston only managed to get 99 all out in reply to that 206 for 8. Lee Matthews managed to get 22, but he was the only one to make it past the 20 mark. Kashif Ali Moon took 5 for it, and Ant Sheeran took himself a 3 for as well. So good efforts from them boys, Wild Bowl boys. Good stuff. Next game was Oakmore, and Oakmore continued to march on, I think it's fair to say, with a victory. Cavers, they posted 197 for 7. Tom Sherrick got 23, Will Leeson 50, 35 for Chris Heathcote, and 39 for John Clowes. And Cavers were all out for 138, wasn't to be. Jake Edge got 28. There was a 22 for Elliot Wright, but it was all about the bowlers there, really. 3 for Jack Palmer, 3 for John Clowes, and 2 for Harry Smith. As Oakmore won again. Roe Park came away with a good victory against Stafford, a very tight game. So Roe Park chose to bat first. They posted 236 for 6 from their 40 overs. 59 from Richard Bevin, 32 from Martin Dawson, 31 from Neil Cheadle, not out. No one really stands out particularly from the bowlers there, I think it's fair to say, for Stafford. Rob James did get 2 wickets, but he did go for 50 runs off 5 overs, so I'm sure he doesn't want me to talk any more about that. Stafford, in reply, finish up 2 runs short, 2-3-4 for 9. 57 from Anas Patel, couple of 27s, and then 50 from Josh Williams, but they just could not get over the line. 2 wickets each for Martin Dawson and Jack Harrison, the main wicket takers there for Road Park, as they hold on for a very, very tight victory. Big high-scoring game up at Sandbach. Good, interesting game, it seems. So, Meary won the toss and chose to field, and I think they basically spent their next 3 hours chasing leather. 2-4-9 for 5, Sandbach managing. 119 out for Gareth Lennon, 59 for Dane Tinsley, and 34 for Jack Kestervan, who seems to get a mention every week on this pod at the moment. So, well done, that lad. But it wasn't to be for Meir Heath. They gave it a good go, though. 2-3-2 all out with just 2 balls to spare. Good effort. 45 Zach Hill, 49 Ollie Edwards, 50 for Maz Akhtar. But they just couldn't quite get over the line. And the wickets, 4 for Ross Kestervan. And may as well say his name again. 3 for Jack Kestervan. Although I've got to ask him about his 11 wides. Not great there. You might, everything we said about you, yeah, everything else we've said about you has been very positive, but 11 wides is not good, not the best effort. As always, extras still managing to score well in quite a lot of these games, it seems. But hey, oh, may as well take advantage, aren't we, of extras. And then, dude, the boys, good solid victory, 1-2-6-8 for Silverdale, 35 from Alex McChristie, the main score. I'll say it for you. 3 for 12 off 8 overs for Aid, the ginger one, Lalo Jr. Why?
Inside edge 4.
Oh, inside edge not good. Also, 3 for 4 for Arzam Sarouf. They just call him Sammy Sarouf.
Sammy, yeah.
I was going to say. And 3 for 4 for Ali Azmat as well, the pro. And then you managed to knock it off with 7 down. 15 for Jono. 10 for Steve Brealey, just give them a shout out.
Oh, he should have been out, Jono, as well.
Oh, my bad.
Poor mate, Albie.
Oh, dear. 23 for Sammy. We won't mention Seb. But Ali Khan with 34 of 23 to finish. I feel so sorry for Seb. Oh,
also,
lad.
You know, I've just looked on our bowling, because you've just mentioned extras. It says 1 by, 2 leg bys, 4 wides.
Yeah.
Which is fair, but if 7 PR, I'm guessing, penalty runs.
Yes.
Which I have no idea where they've come from, because there was no penalty runs given.
interesting. Maybe someone just couldn't add up when they were doing.
Not that I know of, anyway.
Well, yeah. That brings Div 2 to an end, mate. So what's the table looking like in Div 2, dare I ask?
Oh, hang on, mate. Let me get on. We've got, obviously, Sandbach and Norton Ales in the top two, but Oakmore are 1 point behind Norton Ales in third, and there's a little bit of a gap then to like a few teams in mid-table. And then at the bottom you've got Roe Park and Meary joint bottom on the same points. Stafford are next closest, who are 11 points ahead, so not a massive gap, but a little bit of a gap. And then the rest of us are more bunched up in the middle.
Fair. Right then.
We're on the rise, mate. We're on the rise.
You're on the rise, boys. You're on the rise. Go on, the boys. Right then, I guess it's time to get into Div 3. Audley 2s came out victors away at Hemeath. Maybe a bit of a surprise, but good result for Audley 2s. They got 1-9-2 for 7 after, and Hemeath only managed 1-4-1 all out. Crewe, another team who was sort of towards the bottom. Good day for them. They managed to get 1-9-7 for 8. Eccleshall were only 1-9-4 for 8. So a proper tight game there. It was Crewe as well who won the toss and batted first. So Eccleshall falling just 3 runs short, despite taking it right to the end. So Eccleshall feel a little bit unlucky there. Meekins won against Wedges. Big scoring game, 2-6-8 for 9 for Meekins. We only managed 2-3-1 all out in reply. A few overs to spare. Longton won by just the 1 wicket over Hanford. Hanford were 1-6-5 all out. Longton 2s 1-6-6 for 9 with what appears to be off the last. Is that right? Off the last ball of the game, they managed to get there as well. So good effort there from Longton 2s, nice and exciting. Fair play to them. Modishaw 2s won by 8 wickets, quite comfortably to say the least, over Checkley 2s. Checkley 2s 165 all out. Modishaw 2s knocked it off for 168 for 2. Good effort there from them. And then Cheadle 2s won away at Stone 2s. Stone all out for 146. And Cheadle knocked it off 8 down, 150 for 8. What's the table looking like in Div 3, dude? Or shouldn't I ask?
Oh, sorry, mate. I was replying to a message.
It's all right, mate. You keep texting whoever you need to text, my mate.
Peaky.
I could guess it was either going to be Peaky, Jono, or Gina.
That's Div 3. Where are we? We've got Meekins at the top. 11 points ahead of Stone seconds. Then you've got three teams that are reasonably close to second, which are Modern Alton seconds, Cheadle seconds, and Longton seconds. And then at the bottom, Audley are still bottom, even though they got a good win. They're on 59 points. Emmy's second bottom was 64. Then the Mighty Wedge is just 4 points in front.
I know we are. We're lucky to be that. What's this? We keep doing well.
You need to get Big Lad up the order, mate.
I agree, mate. Get the big dog up in that order.
He's opening with me tomorrow in Phoenix.
That's exactly what I want to hear. I'm actually disappointed I'm not in Stoke to watch that. Or even playing it, to be honest.
He's telling me that I can't do it because he's going to be there watching, but I'm hoping by the time he gets there, me and Fat Lad are already out batting.
Good idea, mate. Good idea. Smart. Right, we need to pick, mate, a couple of people to put forward for the vote for Star of the Weekend.
I think
there's only going to be one winner, but we'll still put it out there. So I'm assuming Banks is going to be one of them.
Yes.
I dare say Rob Hemmings also should be another one, even though he's from the same game. I mean, turning a couple of wickets.
As well. There was someone, I think, is it Marshall's Pro? Are we counting Sundays?
If you want to count Sundays, you're more than welcome to count Sundays, mate.
And are we doing pros?
Yes, mate, of course we are.
Oh, that's fun.
I'm not being funny, but I'm sure Banks is getting a bit of brass, mate, so I don't think we can class.
Yeah, I bet it was Marshall and Alton. They got 298 for 4 against Sandbach in the form Sandbach are in, even though I know it's two divisions difference. Rizwan Hussein, 173 of 114. I think that's got to be in there.
So we'll put Rizwan Hussein in, and then we need one more. Now,
Ooh. Or
we can just leave it at 3. Should we leave it at 3? Keep it easy.
Yeah, we could do. Is there anyone else that stood out for you, mate?
Sonny did a pretty good job, to be fair, for Knight, but I wouldn't say he stood out as much as those three. I think like he'd be finishing fourth in that race, if I'm honest. So yeah, we'll just go with the three boys.
Because there's a lot of runs there.
There is a lot of runs there. So we'll leave out to you guys at home to have a little vote on and decide who you think the winner is. I'm pretty sure it'll be Banksy, but you never know. Rizwan Hussein or Rob Hemmings might steal the way. Right, last thing we'll do before we go is quick predictions of the weekend ahead. First, we'll start in the Prem. We'll rattle through one word answer. Bagnell or Burslem?
Burslem.
Meekins or Cheadle? Top of the table clash, that first versus third.
Cheadle.
Longton versus Ashcombe?
Longton.
Port Hill versus Checkley?
Ooh, Port Hill.
Stone versus Leek.
Stone.
And Whitmore versus Modishaw.
Ooh, Whitmore.
So that's the Prem. A couple of easy ones to predict there, but also a couple of hard ones, I'd say. Into Div 1, Audley versus Littlestoke.
Oh, both my old teams. I'm going with Audley.
Yeah. Blythe versus Hemheath. Sorry, Toby Degg, but I know where this is going.
Toby Degg's getting sent to the moon by Liam. So, Hemheath.
So, it's TD coaching. But thank you for continuing to listen to us, mate. We'll get you on at some point, honest. Eccleshill versus Endon, which I would have said at the beginning of the season would be the top two.
Eccleshill.
Knipesley versus Alworth.
That's a tough one.
That's going to be a great game, I reckon. At Knipesley.
I'm going. Knipe.
Newcastle versus Sandiford.
Newcastle.
And then the Parishwood Lane versus Leasit.
I see a backward lane for the first win last week.
And it didn't work.
No, so I'm going Leasit.
Smart. Go against them now. See if you can help them that way. On to Div 2. The Boys versus Road Park and Lawton.
Oh, wow. I don't want to say anything because then
I'll back the Boys then. I'll back the Boys. How about the boys on your... Well, not on your behalf, but anyway. Mia Heath versus Port Hill 2s. Mia Heath been performing a bit better of late.
Yeah, I'll go Mia Heath.
Get him in.
Yeah, Nick Master will be happy, so that's why I'm...
Yes, Nick Master, you also have some more beers for us, dude. When you have a word with John, I'm going to pick him up.
Oh, one's ripped me off last time, mate.
No, lagers, he promised me this time, mate. Lagers.
And then that sound.
Exactly. Norton and Ailes versus Silverdale.
Norton and Ailes.
Oakmore versus Barlaston.
Where at?
Oakmore. Sandbach versus Cav.
Sandbach.
I'm going to say Sandbach, but I reckon Iraq Thomas might like the Sandbach deck because it is a pretty good deck. I think he might score some big runs up there. But I still bat Sandbach. And then Stafford versus All Sager.
Stafford.
Great. And last but not least, into Div 3. We have got, if Play Cricket ever loads, which doesn't always like to, there we go. Cheadle 2s v Meeking 2s.
Meekings.
Checkley 2s versus Hanford.
Checkley 2s.
Crew versus Audley 2s.
Ooh. Audley.
Ooh. Hemeth 2s versus Longton 2s.
Longton 2s.
Mod 2s versus Stone 2s.
Stone 2s.
And the boys, Wedgwood versus Eccleshall 2s.
The boys.
Go on, the boys. Let's hope it is. Let's hope it's a victory. I am praying. So, really, that's all we've got for North Staffs this week. I don't think we've missed anything or there's been any particular big news that we've missed.
We have.
Sunday,
Ollie Wilson's figures.
Yeah, yes.
And Ollie Wilson. I've got to mention him because supposedly he has massive fans of this. I'm guessing it was his missus that come down yesterday. I could be wrong. Could be his cousin, but I'm going with his missus. I was like, is this the podcast that you proper rave about? I was like, oh, has he got little posters on his wall and everything? I did get a video of him in a six yesterday.
You did? It was a big six.
I didn't turn up and see him drop three catches as well.
He dropped three? Yeah. That's been kept quiet. I'm going to have a word with the boys about that.
The face as well. He was down for a couple of minutes.
Oh.
I don't want to laugh too much because I've got play tomorrow and if I drop one then I mentioned, but Bratty's alright. Nice six that I got a video and then did drop three. He did catch one eventually, the hardest one of the four.
That sums him up, that does, Ollie Wilson. His bowling figures on Sunday weren't ones to write home about. But he did have a lovely chat with Ben Degg, didn't he, on Twitter. Big shout out to Ben Degg, who loves the podcast so much that he hasn't listened to it yet.
I was trying to type a message, even though I was about 14 pints deep or something. I couldn't even type. I had to get someone to type it for me. I don't even know what I said. I don't know what he said to me. Get on with it.
Our only point would be, Ben Degg, please make your Twitter unprivate so everyone can actually join in the banter with you. And so it's not just one way because it looks a bit shit.
It's been deleted, but I may be wrong.
Oh, I don't know. There was a tweet deleted when he asked Ollie how he bowled today.
I think Ash told me that all of them have been deleted.
Oh, boo.
Cheadle supposedly have told him, but this could be wrong. This could be completely wrong. But also, I got Des Wilson a shout out because he started listening.
Yes, Des. Go on, Des.
And just was telling me some of these jokes yesterday, mate, and they were just
not worth repeating.
Well, basically, he was walking around, this was the main one he told me, and he let one rip, and he think it was going to be a quiet one, and then blamed some innocent lady and was like, oh my God, is that you?
Wow, just nothing
trying
changes.
To find her up. So, yeah, he wanted a little shout-out, mate.
Ah, well, there's your shout-out, Des. He doesn't look like he's deleted any of the tweets, mate. Or maybe he has.
I can't see anything anyway, so...
Yeah, it doesn't look like he did, unless he's just deleted certain ones. But no, they're all still there. They're all still there. Fair play to him. Did make me laugh, though. I'll give him that. He made me laugh. Not necessarily in a great way. But
we'll get him on at one point.
We will. I've promised him that if he gets 30-plus against the Wedgies, he's got a spot on the show. It's his. So no pressure. Right, I think that's us done, though, dude. I think that is us done. So... For everyone listening, obviously, follow, subscribe, review if you haven't already. Get onto Woodstock. Get ordering some kit with them if you need anything for the season. We've still got our Cry Bat stickers. Please contact us. Please let us know. We'll send them out to you. We'll deliver them to you. We'll pass them on to you one way or t'other. We're raising money for Cardiac Risk and the Young. Great charity. So please back us with that. Support us with that. And we'll be back next week. And I'm hoping, touch wood, that Jono is going to see if we can get the man, the myth, the legend himself, the staff's one day captain, is it now as well, Mr. Pete Wiltshire, on with us. So hopefully we'll be joined by another Ginge next week, dude.
Oh, yeah. So I'll have to see if I can get on a bit later, because obviously I'll be doing the good old umpiring.
Age umpiring, kids.
I'll be all right, though.
Great stuff. Well, that's us done for the week. So everyone, go and have a good week. Enjoy the sun while it's still around. Hopefully it'll still be here for a little bit at the weekend. Go out the weekend, and we'll see you all again next week. Cheers.
Down at Third Man, the cricket podcast, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket.